This, by the way, is an extended edition of the Golden Age of Radio from 6 until 11 p.m. this evening. And I am your host, Max Schmid. 212-209-2950. And that's the number to pledge to take advantage of our offer of membership or any of the fine premiums we're offering as part of this program. I guess I should start by telling you what they are. Of course, if you just want to pledge for the $25 membership rate, you can do that right now, 212-209-2950. We encourage the use of credit cards, Visa, American Express, and MasterCard. Now, from the bottom up, we have a $35 disc that contains all the episodes of Frontier Gentlemen that we have been featuring on the Golden Age of Radio for, oh, at least 6 months now, I would say. And since there was more room on the disc than that, you also get a complete series called Fort Laramie that featured Raymond Burr as Captain Quince, Commander of Cavalry, two adult westerns, and I forget what I threw on there to fill up whatever space was left over, but there's some bonus programs on there as well. All of that on a single disc for a $35 pledge. The programs are in MP3 format. And that $35 makes you a member and gives you the Frontier Gentleman CD. Now, the Ray Bradbury set that we mentioned is a two-disc set. Over 20 hours of old-time radio on disc one, including the WBAI production of The Martian Chronicles, which is actually a compilation of all of the stories from various old-time radio shows, but put in sequence as in the book. You also get 2 episodes of Escape, 10 episodes of Suspense, 8 Dimension X, 7 X-1 shows, as well as some assorted things like Mole Mystery Theater, Think, Radio City Playhouse. That's just disc one. It's every bit of Ray Bradbury on the radio that I could find. The second disc contains modern radio drama, readings, and interviews, and over 22 hours, including Canadian production, 4-part, half hours of Dandelion Wine, a movie adaptation narrated by Orson Welles of Something Wicked This Way Comes, The Golden Apple of the Sun, and a whole bunch more. That's a $60 pledge, 2 discs, Ray Bradbury. Certainly fine listening. Maybe fine for holiday gift giving. Maybe you have a teenager. 212-209-2950 is a number to call to become a member of WBAI. Now, we also have, for Gene Shepherd fans, and we'll be listening to some Gene Shepherd later in the program, but I was lucky enough to come into possession of tapes recorded by Gene Shepherd himself, or his wife at the time, Lois Nettleton. These tapes were found in the Lois Nettleton estate. Now, Shep had taken most of his stuff back from Lois Nettleton, I suspect, when they broke up or she threw it at him. But this box was marked Antique Dolls, and it contained about 9-10 reels of air checks of Gene Shepherd's 1958 programs, which were on at that time, Saturdays and Sundays. And we have 10 complete programs, and this is the rarest and the most extensive collection of Gene Shepherd programs from 1958. And they're available only here, only as a premium, only with your membership to WBAI. It's a 2-disc set, and I have gone ahead and included every other pre-1960 Gene Shepherd broadcast that I can find on this disc, including the earliest 2 recordings of Gene Shepherd in Philadelphia, where he did patter between spinning records for a dancing crowd in a ballroom. So that's included, as well as some other miscellaneous programs from pre-1960. All of that for a $75 pledge lost to Gene Shepherd from 1958. Perhaps one of the rarest and most important finds in the Gene Shepherd collecting world. $75, 212-209-2950. But we're not done yet. No, no. We also have, for you high rollers, although this is a bargain nonetheless, for $125 you can get three DVDs that will contain an extensive collection of old-time radio programs, because it is the other golden age of radio show. Since 2007, I've been producing a weekly broadcast for the Internet at yesterdayusa.com. And the current incarnation of our three DVD set is episodes numbers 1 to 230, I believe. Possibly more, but these are two-hour shows. You get 230 complete two-hour Golden Age of Radio broadcasts for $125. And we feature serials, but we've featured complete series, such as Behind the Mic. Oh, there's just a wealth of old-time radio. If you've enjoyed the Golden Age of Radio, well, this is just another version of that show. These were not broadcast from WBAI, but from the Internet show. And you get them all for a $125 pledge, and of course any of these premium offers makes you a member of the radio station as well. And finally, I'll unleash it now. Tonight's very special Dinner with Max, I'm calling this. What you actually get is a ticket to next weekend's, or it starts Saturday at 9 a.m., the New York Old Time Radio Convention. Saturday, the October the 13th, and continues Sunday morning with a panel and a movie and some other stuff Sunday morning. You get a pass for the full weekend, which includes the banquet dinner on Saturday evening, which is accompanied by a couple of live programs. There will be live radio broadcasts, or recreations, I should say, all day long, and panels. There will be dealer's rooms where you will find me sitting. But at dinner time, here's why we're calling it Dinner with Max, we will have a special Golden Age of Radio reserved table where I will seat you, my guests. You will get a lovely table prize provided by me worth its weight in gold. You will get prime seating for the after dinner shows, and you will get to eat first. Yes, what a perk. Don't wonder when your number will be called. We eat first at the Golden Age of Radio special table. So, if you would like to join other listeners to WBAI. Now, I had a great deal of trouble setting a price for this. Well, Anne Marie thought $200 would not be asking too much. I think she perhaps is deluded. And anything from giving them away to charging, well, you know, Simon Lokely, my dear pal from As I Please, heard Saturday mornings, usually at 7, but during the fun drive, he's on at 6 every day, or every Saturday. He suggested the $150 mark. Now, I think that's where we're going to begin. $150 for a ticket, a pass for the full weekend of the New York Old Time Radio Convention. You can check it out online at nyotr.com. Look at the schedule. See what the tickets cost. I can't tell you what the tickets cost. But with all the bonuses and just the honor and thrill. Now, you don't have to sit at the Golden Age of Radio table, I will say that. You can find your own seat. But we're going to have a special table set aside right down front. So if you need two tickets, $250 for a pair of tickets, $150 for a single ticket. There are only a total of six. You must pledge on a credit card. And that's the deal. I will be your host. Amy Goodman, you know, invite you to see her broadcast of Democracy Now! And bring a guest for $2,000. Well, for a mere $250, you can get a pair of tickets, which includes all activities at the New York Old Time Radio Convention, all the recreations, all the panels, both days. And we'll have a special table set aside for Golden Age of Radio fans. $250 for a pair, $150 for a single ticket. This offer may change. and a special table prize that I will provide that will, I believe, more than make up for what some may consider an excessive amount. But it all goes to support WBAI. These tickets are donated by the New York Old Time Radio Convention. 100% of the proceeds go to support WBAI and to keep the Golden Age of Radio on WBAI. 212-209-2950. All right, well, while I try to make this device work, I'm going to jump into the middle of Gene Shepherd, his next to the last broadcast from KYW, I believe it was, from the town room of the Penn Sheraton Hotel, Gene Shepherd broadcasting live, the earliest and fairly rare recording of him that's now included in the rare lost 1958 programs. I'm picking it up maybe in the middle, maybe at a break. Now, these were recorded over the air from far away, so I want you to know that the sound quality on the home air check tapes of Shepherd's own lost 1958 shows, well, we'll play an example, but they're in pretty much high fidelity, unlike these clips. But Shepherd does talk a lot about old-time radio on this program, so since this is the Golden Age of Radio, let's enjoy some of these musings.
Is there a little car, let us say like an MG, that can take a difficult corner at about 55 to 60 miles an hour that one of our larger, tremendously powered cars couldn't take at 30? And so perhaps on the straightaway, the man might beat him with his big car. But on a closed track or on a road race, the little car will take it every time. Oh, yes, if you want to look up that source again, it is Austin, which is a magazine you can find. It is Austin of October 1952. Look way in the back, and you'll find odd records that have been created. Getting back briefly to radio, radio caused a great revolution in the world of entertainment in the 1920s, and at the same time, many people catapulted to fame, became tremendously successful, both commercially and certainly personality-wise, but I will say not artistically, became tremendously successful with absolutely no talent at all. And if they did have any talent, it was only a time of rashness rather than an actual creative talent. And for example, many of the great announcers of the 1920s couldn't even get an audition in today's big-time radio station. They just couldn't do it. For one thing, they got where they were because people were fascinated with just the idea of hearing something out of the air. And they would listen to these people, and they began to have tremendous stature. And there was an air of mystery about radio that no longer exists. They would give mysterious airs to all these people on the air. They were called Knights of the Airwaves and all kinds of ridiculous things. And they were made very, very romantic, even though romance itself was a purely fallacious thing in connection with radio. And all the announcers of one big radio station, for example, began to be very mysterious characters when none of them used names. They earned thick, fictitious initials. For example, one man would call himself A.J., or another man would say, thank you, good night, this is F.D. speaking. And they began to have a very legendary quality about them. One of them was, speaking of the legendary quality, Milton Cross, back in those days, working in a New York radio station, used to use the designation A.J. I believe it was A.J. that he used. There was a newscaster. He used to work with a newscaster, for example, who never signed his name. He got to be very mysterious among a lot of people. He got to be very, very famous because he simply would sign Q.E.D. It says Q.E.D. reporting good night. And that's all he would say. And people were always interested. Who is QED? What does he look like? And he would broadcast from a studio that wouldn't allow listeners. It wouldn't allow anyone to see him. And he would be spirited out along with insurance men, people who cleaned the floor, and several elevator operators, cleverly disguised as a non-radio type person. These come and these go. A few of the bits of romance cling. Just a few of them. Oh, yes. Don't tell me. I was there. We have a note from the Free Library of Philadelphia to the effect that the Sheridan has been under preparation and certainly under display for the last few weeks. Your Home in 1953 is still at the Free Library of Philadelphia, located here in Philadelphia at Logan Square. There are hundreds of books, periodicals, government documents that will give you many new ideas for your home in 1953. It will be there until Monday. That's this coming Monday, January the 26th, at Logan Square. We also have another note, this time from the Crusade for Freedom people. I've been very interested in this organization because they're using radio as a really prime means of communication. They are the backers of and the formers of the Radio Free Europe group and the Radio Free Asia, fighting communism in the Far East, also fighting communism behind the European Iron Curtain. If you would like to really do something in this fight against communism, send your contribution, because it is all backed and completely backed by private people, private individuals who have pooled their money, their resources, and their time. If you'd like to become part of it, send your contribution to the Crusade for Freedom in care of your local postmaster. That's the Crusade for Freedom in care of your local postmaster. There is another thing that should be discussed and probably won't be discussed until somebody really does write a definitive history of this business, although there have been several attempts at. And that is the mystery that existed in the early days of radio that no longer does. And one of the great reasons, probably the most important reason for this breakdown of the mysterious radio. You know, in those days, there were one man, for example, rose to a tremendous degree of popularity, not because he was really a black singer, but because he was billed as the masked tenor. He was billed as the masked tenor. He was very, very mysterious. And people were always asking, who is the masked tenor? Now, radio could create a wonderful world that really didn't exist in those days because people were much more naive about their radio performers and about the radio business itself. I can remember such things as a man who would always bill himself as, well, we've had several masked tenors, you know, going through this business from time to time. And people who would start the rumor that they were a famous opera star that had fallen into disfavor due to familial difficulties, and they were now forced to be on the radio under an assumed name. People would listen to them for that very reason alone, not because of what they did or incredible, but because of the feeling of mystery and being part of the mystery itself. Experience.
I have my
that's
Japanese music, please.
The experience
one
of
moment.
Suddenly discovering
I want to read about four haikus.
You know,
there has nothing has come on the show in the past year that seems to have touched people more.
All right, we're jumping from the earliest known Shepherd recording to the meat of the lost Gene Shepherd 1958 programs. This is the last hour of one of the Sunday programs from December of 1958, recorded by Shepherd himself for his own use.
Is that it is as completely removed from this mad, wild, insensate dance that we seem to be involved in than anything that has come into their ken in a long time. And I'm very glad that I started to do this because apparently I have brought something to a lot of people who have never heard of this before. I think you should know about it. I think if you know about music and enjoy it, I think if you love words, if you have that feeling, that texture for life, I think you'll enjoy haiku. Haiku is a Japanese classical form of poetry. And I am not Zen and I am not beat. I just happen to enjoy this. And it's written in a 17-syllable form. And one note I'd like to insinuate here about haiku poetry. It is a complete form of poetry in which even the shape of the word on the page is part of the sensation that the poem is supposed to give you. So naturally, if it's translated into English, this particular sensation is lost. You know, when you actually look at the shape of a letter, like say the letter A or the letter G, You are looking at a shape. That shape contains puns, you know. If you know anything about Freudian psychology, you can see all kinds of things in various shapes and forms of letters. You really can. And the Chinese or the Japanese characters, the shape of the Japanese characters, of course, there's the meaning of the word. This is the way they talk about it. The meaning of the word, the sound of the word, and the shape of the word are the three components of haiku. So that there are three different areas in which this stuff makes an impact. But then within the poem itself, it says one thing but implies another and usually means a third. It's very involved stuff. But it isn't as involved as it sounds, you know? It's about as involved as life, which all of us know how to live in one way or another. I mean, we make what we do, you know? We live the way we are, and we know how to play the role that we've made for ourselves. Even if it's a neurotic role, we know how to do it. We know how to be neurotic very well, many of us. But the facts are that this haiku poetry is an attempt to distill emotion rather than let's say, action and reaction. It's made to distill the things which are largely unspoken in our life. And I've received a thousand letters from people, more or less, about this haiku, saying, what is it? Where is it? What is it? What is it? What is it? Well, actually, it's just little three or four line things, 17 syllables that talk about, and it isn't great, so don't fall into the error of thinking that, you know, gee, I can't, what is this stuff? I don't dig this. These guys are just saying it, you know? You either do or you don't. And it covers all four seasons. They always use, in every haiku, classical haiku, you'll find that the seasons are involved because they know that the one thing that is common to all men is spring, fall, summer, and winter. These are the things that everyone knows. And when they speak of spring, fall, summer, and winter, they are also speaking of the spring, the summer, the fall, and the winter of life, you see, which is common to all men, too, throughout all ages. This rise and the fall, the graph goes this way and so. And you'll find the implied season is always there. The instrument that we're using behind the haiku is Japanese, of course, and it is a koto, K-O-T-O. The koto is a classical Japanese stringed instrument that's very difficult to play and is highly complex, and the music is in the pentatonic, which is a five-note scale, which is the usual Eastern scale. But the music, too, is a distilled attempt, in a way, because almost all of the Japanese art, and a large part of the Chinese art, too, because of the age of the civilizations involved, they have finally been able to pare away all the let's say, non-essentials of their art, all the Rococo, they've passed through all those phases until finally the supremest form of art is where a man will make a brushstroke, a dark, light, and modulated brushstroke with a form of India ink on rice paper, and he will say a whole thing to people who see, because they will fill in all those white spaces with things they know of only because of this master stroke. He lays it bare, you see. He says, here. And he just cuts through it all. And it's very intriguing to find that this stuff is truly universal in the sense that it lays bare not a nationality nor a philosophy, but it lays bare the kind of substance of living itself, which is common to all men, whether you're a Ubangi or whether you're living in Kew Gardens or whether you're living in Kyoto. Doesn't make any difference. Do you want me to read a couple of these things? I get swinging on this stuff. Here's a spring poem. Would you like a spring poem on a summer on a summer level, on a cold winter's night? This is a poem by Saikaku. Saikaku was a poet who lived in the early 19th century. And this is a spring poem. Please, the koto, played by a great Japanese musician who is now dead, died a couple of years ago. This is considered one of the finest of all the koto recordings. Here's what Saikaku did about spring. Actually, this is a summer poem. It is a tear about spring. With my new clothing, alas, spring has been buried in that wooden chest. Isn't that lovely? Here's another one. This is Sokan, hands upon the ground, old aristocratic frog recites his poem. It's a beautiful image, isn't it? Hands upon the ground, old aristocratic frog recites his poem. And here's Taiji. As I picked it up to cage it, the firefly lit my fingertips. This is Taiji. Here's another firefly poem by Ryota. Fleeing the hunter, the firefly took cover. The evening moon. You see what he did? Esau. Here is Esau, the poet of poverty, who lived around 1670, something like that, and knew nothing but poverty all of his life. He lived to bury 5 children and a wife, in fact, 2 of them, and didn't have much in the way of happiness. He was born practically from the moment he came as an orphan of the storm. Here's what Esau says. Softly folded fawn shivers, shaking the butterfly, and sleeps again. It's a lovely image, isn't it? Here's what Shoah.
Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past come the historic sounds of radio's bygone days. The golden age of radio rides again.
All right, we're starting the program again because most of you didn't know that we had an extra hour starting early on tonight's Golden Age of Radio. I'm your host, Max Mead. Good evening. We're here with you until 11 p.m. tonight as part of our fall fundraising drive. And if you're just tuning in, well, we still have a wealth of material to bring you. You just heard a brief portion of Lost Gene Shepherd from 1958, his own recordings, home recordings, recorded, I assume, by Lois Nettleton, his wife, and she taped most of the Saturday and Sunday shows. The Saturday shows were 2 hours from 11 to 1 in the afternoon, and the Sunday night shows were from 8 until 1 a.m. Don't quote me on that. I could be off an hour or so, but he had, yes, 2 shows over the weekends. And we have most of November and December 58 programs from Gene Shepherd's own recordings. And these are just recently discovered. We offered them previously in our summer fun drive. And they are available again to Gene Shepherd fans for a $75 pledge. 2 discs that will contain everything I can find pre-1960 Gene Shepherd on 2 MP3 discs. But the bulk of it are these lost tapes from Gene Shepherd's own collection. While I take a breather and eat my cold food, I'm going to go back to the Gene Shepherd haiku, because Therese wanted to hear more haiku. She's back there working hard, entering your pledges into the computer. So we're going to pick it up approximately where we left. Here's a taste of what you're going to get on the Gene Shepherd 1958 shows. Shepherd frequently featured haiku, because he was a man of culture as well as a man of laughs, satire, and humor. So here we go from, let's see, what is the date of this show? December 14th, 1958, Sunday night, from around midnight to 1 a.m. Please continue to call while this is on. You know, we've got to get, got to do better. You, me, all of us. Come on. Andale.
Softly folded fawn shivers, shaking the butterfly, and sleeps again. It's a lovely image, isn't it? Here's what Shoha has to say about summer. These are summer poems. The heavy wagon shook all the roadside, waking a single butterfly. Busan, In the golden room, frightened quick calligraphy. Escaping swallow. You ever seen a bird try to get out? Frightened quick calligraphy. Writing in the air. It's beautiful. Here is Shiki. He wades the river carrying the girl. And see, carrying the moon. Shiki died around 1902 or 1903. Here's one of my favorite Aesop poems about summer. Elegant singer, would you further favor us with a dance, O frog? Aesop. Another Aesop poem. Rainy afternoon. Little daughter, you'll never teach that cat to dance. It's Aesop. How about some winter poems? Let's be real, because winter is the real time of the season. Here are some winter poems. You see, winter is almost always associated with sadness in all men's minds, whether they be 16th century or 17th century Japanese, or whether they be 20th century Americans. Little orphan girl eating a lonely dinner in winter twilight. This is Shohaku. When he visited an orphanage, he wrote this. Here is Kara. In the wintry moon, gales raging down the river hone the rock edges. Yes. They get right to it, don't they? Here is Shadow. The new-laid garden, rocks settling in harmony in the first winter rain. And here is Shiki. When I raised my head, there was my rigid body lying cold. You see, Shiki went through a long period of deathly illness and almost died three times. And he came to look upon himself as being resurrected from the dead. And that's what that poem is about. Here is Sazanami, who lived in the mid-19th century. Over winter fields, bold sparrow companies fly scarecrow to scarecrow. And here is Joso. Bathtub firewood. Thanks for this faithful service, faithful old scarecrow. He's burning his scarecrow. I misread that. Do you want to hear it read properly? Bathtub firewood. Thanks for this final service, faithful old scarecrow. Isn't that an interesting picture? That's poverty, of course, the living with the small things. Here's Busan. And everyone has felt this. My very bone ends made contact with the icy quilts of deep December. The icy quilts. Ooh. What a time for a commercial for a GE electric blanket. Oh, Busan, born 200 years too soon. Betty Furness will tell you how. I can hear a haiku written around Westinghouse. You can be sure, if it's Betty. Here is Aesop again, living in his cold cabin. Poor thin crescent shivering and twisted high in the bitter dark. Yes, that is a cold, icy sliver of a moon. Again, Busan. Busan is a classical poet. Busan and Basho are the Beethoven and Bach of haiku poetry. So lonely, lovely, the exquisite pure white fan of the girl I lost. A winter poem. Here's Isa. In winter moonlight, a clear look at my old hut. Dilapidated. You see, what he says is that when you get old, you see, you've got to look for the second movement there. When you get old, you suddenly look at your life. I will read that one again. In winter moonlight, a clear look at my old hut. Dilapidated. You suddenly begin to see, you know, the moss growing up. Here's Basho. Basho again. Speaking, no, I think I read this last week, so I don't want to read that again. You want to hear some more winter poems? Let's see. Yes, here's one by Shiki. See the red berries fallen like little footprints in the garden snow. This is, again, of course, this is a winter beauty poem, and there are winter sadness poems, and there are winter humor poems. Here's Anitsura. Remember, these are always double-edged poems. They say what they say, but they also say something else. Anitsura. I read this one before. This is an intriguing poem. As to icicles, I often wonder why they grow, some long, some short. How did I happen to be a nothing and Ed Sullivan got so big? Being also a nothing, too, the clown. What is it, airtime or what? Or a good press agent? As to icicles, I often wonder why they grow, some long, some short. There's no question about who's the short one there. Here's Shiki. Shiki is probably the closest to Issa of all the poets of this particular genre. Midnight wanderer walking through the snowy street, echoing dog bark. They take these two images and bring them together. Yoso, colder far than snow, winter moonlight echoing on my whitened hair. Colder far than snow. Here is Basho, so close, so vast, rattling winter hailstones on my umbrella hat. It's a nice one. Shiki, long walking lantern, disappeared into some house. Desolate white hills. You see, even if you haven't been there, you know. I don't know how to say it, but it creates a whole moonlight and a whole feeling, a whole texture. Senna wrote this one, S-E-N-N-A. Solitary crow companioning my progress over snowy fields. And here is Basho, staring delighted even at walking horses in new morning snow. Because there is something delightful about new morning snow. And here is Shiki. Winter moonlight casts cold tree shadows long and still. My warm one moving. Isn't that a beautiful poem? The Shiki, you know, he's a cutter. He really is. And here's Busan. In that cold darkness, my horse stumbled suddenly just outside the house. This one has double edges. Look out for Busan. He speaks many words in just a few. Taiki says, look at that stray cat sleeping, snug under the eaves in the whistling snow. Taiki. And Yayu says, in my new year heart, I feel no fury, even at these tramplers of snow. Strange poem. Shiki says, coffin and mourners passed me, walking down the street, midnight at New Year's. You see, he was very possessed with the idea of death, because he came very close to it many times, and it enters his poetry all the time. Shiki. Here's what Sokan said. To celebrate New Year's, we feast. Newly opened eyes on snowy Fijiyama. They just feast on the world itself. They don't feast on heavy drink. Here's an anonymous death song. No one knows who wrote this. It persists from the late 17th century. Poet Nightingale, will I hear your later verses in the veil of death? That's a beautiful poem. And here is Qinzhou, another death song. Suddenly you light, and as suddenly go dark, fellow firefly. You see, the oneness of everything brings it together. And Issa, of course, the poet again of poverty, you see, Issa is always looking at his life. He's always looking at the texture of it. and the frogs and the crickets that live around them, and the people and the dogs. And this is his death song, or a song about death. Full moon and flowers, solacing my 49 foolish years of song. For 49 years, he's done nothing but sing. But the full moon and the flowers are there. Here is Sokan. If they ask for me, say he had some business in another world. He's a lovely. You know, it's a funny thing. I get all kinds of letters from people who say, Wally, don't do that stuff. It frightens me out here in the darkness to know that other people feel what I feel. That is haiku. That's enough for... Is that enough for tonight? You know you'll hold it for... Oh, you could go on forever. It is beautiful stuff. There's no question about it. So don't put it down, you know. It is the most difficult form to write. And, you know, you swing along and you have these momentary feelings like, you know, I was standing in... This is the kind of thing that... This is pure haiku. I was standing in Liggett's again. You know, you can stand in Liggett's on 42nd Street. Now, get the haiku. Get the feeling of it, you know. I'm standing in Liggett's on 42nd Street, which is a kind of an amalgam of all of the moment now. You know, everything is going. The jukebox is roaring, and they're selling the plaster. They're selling the plastic ICBMs, and everything is swinging. And this cop came in, and I'm there trying to buy a few props for the show. And I'm standing there, and I'm waiting by the cash register. And you know, they have one of these cash registers where you bring your stuff over and you give it to the guy. And this little short guy is working the cash register, and he's got one of these little brown coats, these tan coats that drugstore guys wear, and he's working away at the keys, toing, boing, and he's ringing up Baby Ruth bars, and he's ringing up Anison, and he's ringing up plastic ICBMs and everything, and he's going along there, and I'm waiting. And all of a sudden, this cop came in, and he walked up to him, and he was a friendly, sort of a short, youngish-looking cop. He says, "Hi," he says, "you got anything new for old Charlie, the crime fighter?" You know, and he was Charlie the crime fighter. You know, and I heard this, and I looked, and I he walked sort of back towards this cop. I don't know who he was. He's on this beat, but here's a guy with a sense of humor, and he has a peculiar poetic sense of humor. "Hi, you got anything new for old Charlie the crime fighter?" And the guy on the cash register kept going, "Ka-toing, boing, boing, ka-tung, thung, boing. Here's your change. Ka-tung, boing," you know. And he walked on past and went back towards the phone booths. I says, "Yeah, you know, man." He walked right past a machine that says, "Ten Commandments. Take home a copy for a souvenir." A souvenir of what? Our time? A souvenir of the pratfall that we all made of it all? You know? And he kind of slithered on back, and there we were. There we were, just a-sitting and a-waiting. Just a-spinning and a-spinning. Just to keeping that old spinning wheel going. "You got anything new for old Charlie the crime fighter?" Old Charlie the crime fighter. I'm going to have to meet Charlie. In his own way, he's an Issa. He realizes about himself. You know, it all fits together. There are pieces. It's like one of the most dangerous tendencies in our time, and it's been becoming more and more a thing which I have become aware of. And I'm not trying to be a seer or an oracle, because I'm afraid of seers and oracles. It's a thing which has bothered me. And I've been with a lot of college people, and I get a lot of mail, and I see a lot of things, and there's an ugly note that's beginning to creep into something that just comes in from left field. And this ugly note is a kind of thing that's the new thing. It's a new thing. It is a vacuum. Well, we've had vacuums many times before, but this is a true vacuum in which everything that the college student and everything which the growing person, when I say growing, I'm not necessarily referring to someone, you know, you can grow till you're 89 years old and finally cork off, which is what I hope to do. And so when you're growing, you're always looking. You're always looking. You're examining and re-examining. You're feeling the texture of the stucco houses. and you're watching the sky and the moon, and you're there, you know. You're really there. You're not just walking through it. You're there. This is the beauty of it.
All right, because there are as many people out there who don't like Shepherd as do, we'll cut that there. A taste of Gene Shepherd from December, what was it, 15th? December 14th, 1958. A little poetry to calm us down, chill us out here on the Golden Age Radio. I'm waiting to see a new tally pop up. I had some people to thank, but all of those cards have been whisked away. For processing, we did get a little bit of a response during our last pledge break, and I thank you for that. Still have four tickets left. The Friends of Old Time, no, it ain't the Friends of Old Time Radio Convention anymore. It's not your grandmother's convention, no. This is the new modern-day New York Old Time Radio Convention. It's coming up next weekend. Tickets are $150 per single ticket for a full pass, including the banquet, at a special table with me, if you so choose. Like I say, you can sit any way you want, but we'll have a special table set aside in the front, close to the stage. And I will provide you with a package, a door prize, as it will. And I'm going to tell you what it is, because, you know, maybe when you realize that I'll be handing you the Yesterday USA package and some other stuff, you know, that's a $125 pledge if you got that by itself. But, you know, you'll get it along with your pass. And I can't tell you the value of that pass, but it's, you know, the combined value is considerably more than what you pay at the door. 212-209-2950, $250 for a pair of tickets at a special table, VIP treatment, $250 for a pair, $150 for single tickets. Four remain. Don't stick me with these. Don't make me eat these. You know, you're supporting the station. I imagine you want to go to the convention. And, sharing it with me is either a curse or a blessing. You decide. But, you know, grab those tickets. Support WBAI, 212-209-2950. I guess I'm no Amy Goodman. Let me tell you about the Buddy program again, because if you sign up to the Buddy program for $15 or more a month, you can get one of these tickets this way as well. Yes, the Buddy program helps cut down the number of on-air fund drive days. That's right, when we know we have money coming in without asking for it and begging and pleading, why, we know, you know, we can budget better. And you get a tote bag with this, a BAI tote bag grocery bag when you pledge to the Buddy system. You get member perks. Discount programs at local shops and museums. Hell, you used to get that with anyway. But discounted or free entry to live BAI events like the Chris Hedges event coming up next week. And you automatically become a voting member of WBAI once your donation meets or exceeds $25. So those are some of the benefits of being a WBAI buddy. First of all, you don't have to think about it. You won't miss $10, $15, $20 a month. And it will be deducted automatically from your account until you say no, until you've had enough. Become a buddy by calling 212-209-2950 or take advantage of any of our other premium offers. I've been staring at $635 in the tally for about an hour or more now, and I sure would like to see an updated figure, at least, you know, so I know we made at least $1,000 in the 3 hours we've been on the air. This is pathetic. This is really tragic. 212-209-2950. Where are you people? Where are you people? We have Pat Novak for Hire. We got Bob Hope and Ghostbreakers. We have Moore Shepherd. We've got Henry Morgan. Many of these requested by you. But without the radio station to broadcast them, we won't have a place to play them anymore. We need you to call and become a listener sponsor. Dave Kenny, by the way, would ordinarily be here at this hour. Oh, I don't have next week's schedule. I assume he's going to be on next week. I will not be. I'll be resting up after a busy NYOTR convention. I think we'll be back 2 weeks, 2 weeks from tonight for who knows how long. Maybe we'll be reduced to an hour because we can't deliver anymore. 212-209-2950. We need to hear from you. We need those $25 pledges, $35 Frontier Gentleman pledges, $60 Ray Bradbury pledges, $75 Gene Shepherd pledges, $125 Yesterday USA pledges, three DVDs, 232-hour programs on DVD for a pledge of a mere $125. Tickets to the New York Old Time Radio Convention next Saturday and Sunday. $150 for a single. We're throwing in the WYUSA thing with that. Don't ask for it. It will be part of your package with the ticket. If you need a pair of tickets, $250 for two tickets. Two complete entries to the weekend's events. And two banquet tickets. By the way, I did look up the student offer. Yes, students with valid IDs can go to the daytime portion of the convention free of charge. And you can find those details at nyotr.com. How to do that? If you're a student interested in old-time radio, wouldn't that be nice? And a bit of a novelty, too, I reckon. You can attend the convention daytime activities, all the recreations and panels and dealers' rooms, free of charge with a valid ID. So, trying to expand the world of old-time radio and modern radio drama in general as an art form. But WBAI needs your pledges. 212-209-2950. Won't somebody break the silence, the deafening silence? 212-209-2950. Don't we need to find another way to give away these goddamn tickets? Oh, boy. Yep. Anne-Marie, you were so wrong. $200. It is to laugh. Simon, you were wrong. $150. It is to laugh. Your old pal Max is worth nothing, apparently, to the listening audience. Not even with free passes. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Fundraising. How humiliating. How embarrassing. One caller on the line. Well, that caller's been there forever. It's probably someone that's lonely, looking for someone else lonely to talk to in the tally room. We're going to listen to Pat Novak. He's lonely. He's depressed. He expresses it better than I do. The CD ran out. Who really cares? Here's Rita Malloy, Pat Novak for Hire, Episode 7. This stupid player doesn't give me the date, even though it's part of the title, so I'll tell you later. I don't care. Here, enjoy. Have a radio show for free, you freeloading cheapskates. This is WBAI New York, where we can't even get a tally.